Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. You are listening to the Nerdcast, but what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
I got a bad feeling about this.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
Your stunned silence is very reassuring.
Only on Project Nerd.
Welcome, everybody. It's the Nerdcast 233. I looked at the other
side. Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah. Look at you knowing ahead of time.
Wow. God.
After a month-long hiatus.
I was going to say, when was 232? How long ago was 232 at this point?
August 18th. So I mean, 5 weeks.
Time is a flat circle and has no meaning, but.
And this year, for sure.
But, I mean, there's a thing.
But it is 233. We're brought to you by Geek Garage, as always, Geek-Garage. They're probably sponsoring us for another year because we owe them like 100 episodes or so still. So Geek Garage, check it out. If you haven't checked it out, one of the founding fathers of Geek Garage, Colorado Batman and Batmobile. I don't know if you guys have seen it. So he sold off the 350Z, which our friend Christy K bought it. She picked it up, dressed up as Harley Quinn, of course. And made a little video, but he bought a nice little new Corvette. I would say it was 3 or 4 years old, a vet, and has already started. He's put the new decals on, the new lights. He's put in, starting to do.
Well, it's going to look very slick, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's already looking nice. And if I am into a sports car, I'm not a huge car person, but if there's a sports car I like, it's the Corvette. So I'm ready to see this decked out of the Batmobile. So go check it out, geek-garage.com. Adam, Tyler, myself, Bob, I apologize. Bob did reach out and said he can go if we record earlier. But as we were just complaining before we start recorded, it's all, we don't even know what time it is anymore. We're all working nonstop, all this stuff. So there's no way I'm getting up on Sunday morning and getting on a computer at like 8 or 9 a.m. my time. So not happening. Sorry, Bob. He messaged me on Thursday. He went 92 hours straight between working and on call. Yeah. You know how he does. He jumps up to Mary.
That's awful. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was exhausted and the stuff he was typing didn't even make sense. So Bob, get some sleep. We do miss you, bro. But gentlemen.
So how many movies did he watch during those 92
right,
hours?
Right. Right. That's the
thing. All I could think. It was like, that's just 92 hours of Bob getting to watch movies, depending on how busy they are. Yes.
For sure. For sure. So gentlemen, besides work, which we've all been doing that nonstop, what else have you been up to?
I've been reading comic books. I read Batman Hush. We talked about it a little bit. Good book. Really enjoyed it. I feel like that's been out for a long time, right? I'm not spoiling anything by talking about it, am
I? That's early 2000s, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then they made an animated version of it, so that at that point, once they make an animated version, I think spoilers are fine.
Whole new edition, right? So, I mean, you get all the way through it, and they do a really good job of, you know, it felt similar to Long Halloween, really good job of who's the bad guy, who's the real bad guy. You deal with a lot of Batman villains. And you get to the end, it's Riddler, and it was rather unsatisfying.
It is. I agree with you for a couple reasons. One is it makes the Riddler seem almost more sinister than the Joker. The Joker in Hush is the very sinister version too of him. So it makes it really that. And also too, I feel like you get a lot of, I think it does really well with the women heroes of Gotham too, or not necessarily heroes, even Catwoman, all right? But Catwoman and Huntress get a lot of
points. Yeah, you get Catwoman and Huntress, yeah.
And I love both those characters. They do really well with them. But I feel that you get so much Huntress, and then all of a sudden it's just not there anymore. Like, it's also, too, like, the Joker is out sinistered by the Riddler, but two, with a weak payoff, like you said, and two is you have so many characters, and they just don't do enough time. So you get so much great character, and then it just feels like they fall off. But other than that, I love it. Those are weak complaints compared to the goods of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read the whole thing in two sittings, so it's not like I had a real problem with it or anything. But, I mean, you get to the end, and it was just like, you get all the stuff with Clayface and Jason Todd, and you're like, oh, yeah, shit, Jason Todd, that's right, awesome. And then you're like, oh, wait, no, it's not really Jason Todd, it's Clayface. You're like, well, that's kind of disappointing. And, well, I guess it makes sense, because Batman realizes he never says his name and all those, that
kind of stuff. Till a couple years later. And then it was Jason Todd the whole time.
Yeah, it's way cooler than Jason Todd, right? And you get to the end and it's just like, oh yeah, it was Riddler. who's been in Arkham this whole time. So we didn't even have to catch him. It's just, he's already caught. There's no payoff. And we've got this really cool new guy, Thomas Elliot, who we're just not going to do anything with, who stands up like fist to fist against Batman at the end and is just like, yep, I'm this good. And you're like, who is this guy?
It's really interesting. It's funny because like Hush sets the stage for a lot of really great stories down the road. And like there's parts in Hush that are like Iggy said are really good. Like some of the stuff with Catwoman and Bruce is really good. A lot of the stuff with Huntress is really good. But as a whole, like you feel let down when it's over. But stuff that happened in that book gets used for the next, God, almost, they're calling back to Hush for almost like 10, 15 years, I feel like, between Heart of Hush and all the other stuff that happens. Under the Red Hood is immediately takes stuff from Hush. Heart of Hush, obviously, is a sequel. I'm trying to think how many other books, like, either continue storylines or pull, you know, plot points from things that happened in Hush. And it's, I think it's more popular almost for that than the actual story itself. Not that the story's bad, but like Under the Red Hood pulls directly from that. And then Heart of Hush, I will say Heart of Hush is the best thing about Heart of Hush is it goes back and makes Elliot, turns him back into a menacing character with like depth as opposed to just some guy who's basically a patsy for the Riddler. So
yeah, Heart of Hush is it's one of those things to where it's like as itself is maybe it's not as good as Hush, but when you if you were to call it the whole piece, like it's a really good additional piece to Hush. I think I have both of them, they're probably downstairs. I love those, are two of my favorites. And you mentioned too The Long Halloween, which I think is obviously another classical favorite Batman story.
Yeah, that was the, I mean that's the first full one that I'd read, right? You talked about that on the podcast. I did a write-up on the website for it and everything. I enjoyed Batman. So if you look at my shelf right now, it's Brian K. Vaughan books and Batman. That's what I've got.
KV, which by the way, come on, guys. I need some more Saga. Like it's been far too long since Volume 9 right now. Like I'm like itching over here. Like, come on. But in the meantime, like revisiting some Why the Last Man for some early Brian K. Vaughan there. And of course, I have the Paper Girls, right? It's Paper Boys or it's Paper Girls, yeah. The Image one that's simultaneously released with Saga. It's his other creator-owned title.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Paper Girls.
I moved them all back over there. I don't know. Paper Girls, which it's been a while. I have a couple volumes I could still read on that I need to get to. So, gosh, he's always some good stuff. And then, obviously, just watching a lot of Garth Ennis. The Boys season 2 is here. You guys keeping up with that, Tyler?
I haven't watched this week's, but yes, I'm caught up, and maybe I'll do that after this. Wife and I like to do that on the weekend.
Yes, I am caught up on The Boys.
So I don't know about you guys, but I'm digging it. I'm digging it. They have made additional changes. So as we talked about, we hinted last time because it was right before season 2 dropped. You're basically at the end of almost 72. Like I looked it up because it was ran like 5 to 6 years. After that, your big drop is the end of season 1, really, in a way. But what the big part of it, and then they make a twist, a little change from the comic. Really have been wanting, so I've been watching it with Erin, and I've been, like she obviously didn't read the comic, so there's the big thing we talked about last time off air too, Tyler. And I feel like they're leading towards it. It's going to happen. I feel like it's going to happen. And it was, is it last week's episode?
That episode at Butcher's Inn. I thought, oh, it's happening.
I thought it was going to go right here. So I like get to the edge of the seat and then it doesn't happen. And I'm like, Erin, I want to tell you something so bad, like right now. But I think, first of all, and I think we've all praised him up and down over the years, Carl Urban. I love Carl Urban from his small role in Ragnarok, obviously, but obviously Dredd. He's a fantastic Judge Dredd. He is Red, which I know Tyler loves, retired and extremely dangerous as well. He's great. Although Star Trek, obviously Bones. But
you're missing the biggest one.
Biggest one, Carl Urban. What did I miss?
He's Eomer, Marshal of the Mark.
Oh, sorry, Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings. My bad. He's like in every nerdy thing there is. That's right. Yeah. So he's great, obviously, as Billy Butcher. But I'm telling you, and I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head, and Mother's Milk, like from the page to the screen, like he is perfect. I absolutely love his character.
I think the coolest change slash, I mean, I don't, change is not the right word, but they made a change and you were curious where they were going to go with it. And then they go all in and commit to it hard is the way they've treated the Stormfront character.
Right.
Like, yep. And in this episode, especially, they make it clear. No equivocations, no waffling, no kind of, sort of, but not really. No. Straight up, this is who this character is, and this is what they're about. And if you're not cool with it, get the fuck out of the way, because this is where we're going with it, and it's fantastic. Also, right. Aya Cash is another person I will put on the anytime Aya Cash shows up in anything, I'm 100% on board with her. I don't know if anyone's ever seen You're the Worst. It was a show that was on Hulu, and it's about just horrible people doing terrible things, and she was in it, and she was fantastic. Anytime she shows up in something, I'm a fan, and she's really good at Stormfront.
Yeah, the Stormfront change is very significant. I mean, it's obviously... The character that comes from the comic is a male, and they've made it a woman character, and it works perfectly with what they're doing with it. I agree. I'm really enjoying that arc. Really excited. I was kind of shocked where they went with your end of season one surprise. I'm really shocked where we're sitting at right now with it in season two, to be honest. I think not even this week. Adam, you're there already. If we need to, I don't want to drop too much. We're going to have to just do a whole episode of spoilers on The Boys, because I think... This, just like Preacher, which is also another Garth Ennis adaptation, we stray from the comic, but we do it in a way that works. And I think it's what Goldberg and Rogan's production company that did both. And I think they've done a fantastic job with it. And they kept it just as gory and over the top and everything as the comic. But at the same time, they take big elements of it and add their own twists and go different with it, to where I think even as the fan of the comic series, you can be pleasantly surprised and appreciate.
They do a good job of saving Ennis from some of his worst impulses. Like, I've liked a lot of things that Garth does, but there's a few things that he, number one, does way too much of, and number two, does just for the sake, I think, of shock, and they do a better job of making it fit the story as opposed to, like, just doing it to have done it. I don't know. So, I like Garth a lot, but... he has some blind spots.
I think it was because Boys came out after Preacher in the comics, and I'm pretty sure there was the interview with him where he said, oh, we're going to out-preacher Preacher with the shock. Like, he definitely just wants the shock factor in some of it, for sure.
I will say the one thing that Preacher and, or especially the Boys, but Preacher's done was significantly less rape, which is a good move in the right direction.
There was a couple moments, especially in season one of Boys, there's a couple moments where you're like, we're just going to leave it as implied, thank goodness, because it's definitely, yeah. It doesn't hold back in the comics. I still, and we talked about it extensively after season one last year, I still, because we rewatched season one, Aaron hadn't seen it, so we watched it before we started season two. And the plane scene from the comics to the show, like it's still just so hard. Like, it is difficult. It is a difficult scene. They do so good.
Well, I think that you got to give a lot of that to Anthony Starr. His callousness as Homelander is, he's so removed from anything that any of the rest of us would ever remotely feel or deal with. And he just plays it so, so well, because you know, it's not just the words, but the way he says them and how he holds himself and like slight little flicks of the wrist and mannerisms with his hands, just little things where you're like, that person doesn't care at all about anything that's going on. And in that plane scene, the only thing that gets any emotion from him is his anger with Maeve, or his like frustration that she could potentially care about anybody that's on that plane other than...
I'm impressed at how good of an adaptation this is, in the sense that they've been true to the source material while at the same time would say making it better. Because
yeah.
I would say right now, and we're not even done with it, I would say that this is better than the comic book, and the comic book is good. I mean, even if you don't take points off the comic book for some of like Ennis's like excesses, like the comic book is really good. The show is so much better. Like, they're doing such a good job with it, and I'm really impressed. But this week especially is probably one of the better episodes of the show of either season.
Oh.
Between all the Stormfront backstory stuff and then the whole Frenchie backstory and Lamplighter is fantastic. Like, that whole arc is amazing.
Also, the casting decision there too. I really was like, we're going both ends of the spectrum here. Okay.
That's not a spoiler. That was all over the place. So, do you remember who a Lamplighter is, Adam?
I mean, I know who the character is, but we never see him in season one. He's always talked about, right?
Because he'd been getting kicked off the team and because of things he did. So he shows up in this
quote unquote retired.
Kicked off the team because he did some things and. So he shows up and he is, I mean, I guess, I don't know. Do you care if you know who plays him? It was reported all over the place way before the season came out, but so it's not necessarily a spoiler, but
I'm going to watch it.
So it's Sean Ashmore.
Who's that?
Iceman.
That's known for playing Iceman in the X-Men comics. Yeah.
So he's playing.
Oh, snap. Okay. Yeah.
Higher powered character here. The ice power character. Yeah. It's great too. And the way his powers work are a lot like Pyro's too, where he manipulates the fire, but he has to have it. He can't create it. Right. So it's really
cool. Definitely has a lot of Zippo scenes, unlike Pyro did in the X-Men movies.
But when I saw him, I'm like, wait a second. And then I explained the era, and I was like, that's Iceman in X-Men. And she's like, cool. I don't know what you mean.
I think he popped up in the last episode, because I remember seeing him in something I watched like recently, and I was like, oh, it's fucking Iceman. And Laura's like, oh, yeah, that's who it is.
Because she makes the phone call in the last episode, and he answers
the phone. It's just like a little thing, right?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. So that is because we just watched both episodes back-to-back on Friday. So it was the episode before that. So awesome. That's The Boys. Check it out. Obviously, we'll try to be as spoiler-free as possible. We're going to talk a lot here in this podcast about what we're watching and doing, but there are some really big headlines happening right now. I do want to race down them. Obviously, the biggest thing happening right now is the next generation console wars have finally come to a point of fruition. I don't know. We've sat here and under normal circumstances, we would have had more live events with in-person press. We would have seen more gameplay. The systems, I think, would have gone on pre-order months ago. Obviously, this year, so weird, everything like that. Disaster. Each company waiting each other out for announcements. Microsoft finally comes out, gives us the prices, the two lines on the Xbox. Considering inflation, the Xbox Digital Edition, so the Series S, at $299 for your pre-order USD is the considered since the I believe the only next generation console that was cheaper at launch with inflation is the GameCube. This is technically the cheapest by like $15, I think, on one of the other Nintendo systems. So that's really cool. Sony turns around. They're like, we don't have to play that game. We'll still get the sales. They go $500 and $400 at their price point. So $100 more on their digital.
Their digital is the same hardware as their
right. So
as
yeah,
their non-digital, the Xbox Series S is a step down,
which was not really reported until the systems kind of came out till recently. Right. Like they kind of
specifications, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. So you have this, and then the biggest news probably of it all is that Sony says they do their press event on September 16th on a Wednesday. Say tomorrow pre-orders start that night. As soon as retailers get their quantity list, they just start launching pre-orders left and right, all random times, as only we can be in this day and age. And trust me, my son who wants one, who has saved up all year, everybody's pissed because nobody can get one. And it kind of goes a little further into what we were talking about with the Boba Fett shoes too. I'm sure there's a bot thing here in play because people have been sitting at home and writing new scripts, and anything that's only available online right now for pre-order or order is just getting scooped up as quickly as possible. Disaster. Microsoft kind of leans into it and says, we're going to tell you the exact moment it goes on pre-order. We're going to do all this stuff. And then everything crashes on their pre-order day, of course. So it is, Sony obviously has owned up, apologized that they didn't work with retailers close enough to handle it. More pre-orders going to drop out. I think, what was the number? They are obviously going to be less systems available because of a chip error, but they're still saying somewhere like five times the amount that are for pre-order or at launch that were available than the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, so they wanted 14 million. That chip issue, or 14 or 15, that chip issue knocked back 3 or 4 million. So I think they have 11 million available at launch. And that's across both versions. So
that's
digital.
It's a lot of systems at launch.
I'm significantly more, I mean, Sony obviously did not handle it well. You have to have a better understanding, set some ground rules with your retailers, and it was a shit show, and we get it. But at the same time, it's not like there isn't anyone who wants a PlayStation who's not going to get one. You just may have to wait a while. Now, how long that wait is due to production stuff, you know, who knows? I'm significantly more forgiving of this sort of stuff than I am of like, how many of those Boba Fett shoes did Adidas make? 10 pairs? 11 pairs? Because I don't even get it. I get it. I'm not a huge sneakerhead, and I have friends who do, and they deal with this. This is the life that they live.
Five times this summer, dude.
My stepbrother-in-law has a room in his basement that looks like the back room of a Foot Locker. It's amazing. He has so many amazing shoes. But I guess at some point, doesn't the cachet, like the need to like drive hype and demand and cachet evaporate, and you just want to make money? Because they could have sold as many of those Boba Fett shoes as they made at that $110 price point. Instead, they sold all the ones they had and made eight people angry. And now other people are making money off of those shoes on eBay and whatever else. I guess I don't understand the business sense behind it. Why would you not, even if you want to make them limited, do they have to be that limited? Because you still could have sold.
Tyler's really angry about these.
So many pairs of shoes. It's not that I'm angry. Like they were really cool shoes. I would have liked to have gotten them. I didn't get them. It's fine. Whatever. World's not going to end because I didn't get a pair of shoes that I was going to wear once in a while. But the problem is, it upsets me from a logic standpoint. It's like, why do you not want to make the money.
The company like, can
you,
make
do you
a
just
bunch
not
of
want
money.
Money?
Exactly.
Do you just not want the money? You just want angry customers and less money is apparently what that's what you got out of this. Angry customers and less money.
Well, so. I with when it kind of combining it from the sneaker experience, which is I am into, as well as the game system experience, which obviously this is not the first time this has happened with the next generation of systems. They're sold out at pre-order. We all worked at Best Buy during the Wii era. We know what happened then. These things are, I understand the technology side of things to where you can only get so many PlayStations out right now. And that's kind of like what you said, Tyler. It's okay, we'll get it in a few months as to where with sneakers you're not. But you're exactly right as the fact of it's, is at what point do you understand this is not the same world it was? Because he used to say, okay, we're going to only release this many sneakers. People would go stand in line. Once you've stood in line all morning for something, I'm like, I'm here. I'm going to buy something, right? So you might still sell something else to those people. Nobody's in line anymore. You're on online. So exactly. You're not getting those pity or secondhand sales or whatever you'd want to classify them, that you're losing stuff. As for the game systems, I think Adam probably remembers because he played my PlayStation 4 all the time. I just walked into Best Buy in January, like after that winter of launch. And because it's 3 weeks after Christmas and nobody's shopping anymore, they were just sitting on the shelf and I picked one up. And that's what I told my son, who's really eager about, because this is his first one he saved up for. It's going to be his first next gen system instead of the one that's in the living room and everything, right? Like he's super excited for it. And I'm like, if it comes to it, you still have the money saved up, set aside, and probably in January you find them because people are done panicking Christmas shopping, right?
I think you'll probably have them before then. So I had the same problem here that you guys had in the States, right? Like everywhere. Did it, but the retailers here were a little bit better about it. So, you know, Amazon did theirs. As soon as the presentation was over, those things dropped on the Amazon site, right? So once they knew what they had, like you said, they're live and you go get them. A friend of mine went and got one that night. You know, he said I was online 5 minutes after the presentation ended, got my PlayStation, no problem. The next day I was like, oh crap, I forgot they were doing this. Let me check and see where people have. And I managed to get one pre-ordered here. You can see everywhere the site that I got it from crashed. The queuing site that they use to help get people into an online reservation system crashed. It's a huge issue. And it's crazy to me that this is a thing that still is a problem. Like, we know what's going to happen. You know, how do these retailers that want all of these systems not have things set up for their site in a better way? Like, I guess that's my first.
Yeah.
Right, that's my frustration with all of this is yes, part of the problem is that they're not living up to or fully registering the things that Sony wants them to do in terms of when they put those on sale, the pre-orders on sale. But the other side of it is, you know that there's going to be 20,000 people that hit your site within 10 minutes or 5 minutes of that going live. How are you not ready for something like that? It's like when a new game launches and the servers for EA drop down and you're like, you're one of the biggest game companies in the world. How don't you have servers that can survive a launch day ever, never? They never do. Every single game, doesn't matter what it is, launch day, site fail, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, launches for games are unforgivable because you can just put up more servers. You're just cutting corners there. The thing with crashing sites with a timed or a limited release like this, I think, is a little bit more forgivable because, and it points to the bigger problem with it, those site, it's not 20,000 people signing onto the site to try and buy it. It's 20,000 people trying to log into the site to buy it, and God knows how many bots being done to try and log in and buy it. And to the point where, like, the sites are basically getting the equivalent of a DDoS attack. Like, it's a distributed denial of service attack, but it's a real thing. Like, it's just that many IP addresses actually trying to access it over and over and over and over and over and over again, because all those bots are sitting there reloading the page God knows how many times. So it's not surprising that those websites go down. I don't know that you can prepare for that. I mean, a DDoS done correctly will crash the biggest website out there. Like, right? I don't know.
But there's got to be something to slow down this bot thing. And part of it has to be the coverage of it. Like, fuck you, Business Insider, for spotlighting some of these. You talk about sneakerheads. There's a guy who profited $70,000 because he was stuck at home, still working, employed, but since he was stuck at home, not able to go anywhere, he wrote a new script and profited $70,000 on sneakers this summer off of people. Fuck that dude, and fuck Business Insider for spotlighting him. Like, quit. It's the American dream to just make money at whoever's expense, right? Like, that's where we need to quit that crap, to where, because as soon as you make some kind of new firewall, some protection, somebody writes a new script that's going to dance around that, right? So it is, I totally get what you're saying, Tyler, and it is hard for them to even combat it. But I think in a way we combat it is one, don't miss out and then go spend $1,000 on a PlayStation 5 pre-order 2 hours later on eBay. Don't give these guys your money. And, you know, if otherwise, then they quit doing it. If I'm stuck with 80 pairs of the same shoe because I got screwed by having my bot pick them all up and now nobody will pay me $50 to $100 more per pair, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not letting my bot run on the next drop, right? So it's got to be us as the consumer that stops overpaying for these things on the secondhand market. And there's certain ones like you want to do, which I don't think they're attractive, but the Travis Scott edition of the shoes, like those get super popular when it comes out. So those are limited to what, a few hundred pair. The BC Boys Adidas, that was last winter that I was freaking out about, but I didn't catch till like a month after they dropped. So there would have never been a chance anyways if I did. You know, I think there was like 300, 500 pairs total. Those are the things I understand and that I see people spending on them. But when you're talking about 11 million PlayStation 5 units and they're already selling for 2 to 3 times as much on eBay, and people are already have bids in on them at that price, you as the consumer are allowing yourself to get screwed on these pre-orders now because you turn around and give these people the money. Lesson learned, I guess. I don't know. Not learned by most.
Yeah, but. I mean, I guess I don't know why people do that part, like buy the expensive ones. But especially with, like, you look now, the changes in just logistics and production for like electronics and stuff like that. There won't be any PlayStation 4s probably day one, but there'll probably be some day 2 and day 3 and day 4 that just come out each every day. Like, it's just like you look at like an iPhone launch these days. Used to iPhones would run out and then you're waiting weeks for them. Now it's like every store that sells them gets more each and every day. Now maybe the one specific model and color and thing you want might be the really, really popular one. But if you don't, I would be surprised if anyone who really wants a PlayStation 4 needs to wait more than like 2 weeks to get one, or PlayStation 5 needs to wait more than 2 weeks to get one after launch day. I would be shocked.
Right. And knowing that again goes back to let these people be hung to dry on eBay who somehow was able to write a script and order 30 of them. And then what do they do? They can't, you know, they're not paying that credit card off as quickly when there's 30, you know, so leave them there. Anyways, that's the big launch. We'll probably have a lot to talk about the next gen systems this fall. I do want to get through some other things because we did have some huge movie news, but more importantly, we had some huge trailer drops since we last met, guys. Obviously, Mandalorian season 2 trailer, the WandaVision trailer, which, ooh, look at that. Are we going to talk about it, Tyler? We're going to talk about the trailer of trailers. I've watched it at least 7 or 8 times now. That Dune trailer looks so good. Tyler, I want you to give us your opinion on it.
Probably watched it at least 10 or 15 times the day it came out, easily.
Oh, does it make you guys sweaty? It makes me sweaty. Like, I get, like my heart starts racing. I'm like, ooh.
It gives me chills because, I mean, it's very clearly, for one, I will say, because obviously before Interference, I think Frank loved it and he was going in the right direction. It very much resembles almost shot for shot scenes from Lynch's Dune. Because Lynch did a really good adaptation. I mean, people can talk about the weirding ways and the voice thing and the whatever, all they want. But, like, he loved the book, and Frank liked the adaptation. He was doing good things. But the just lines pulled straight from, the minutiae of it, it's fantastic. Like, everything about just the feel of it and, like, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I like all the people, that all the casting is really solid. All of the setting, like the design. I mean, here's the thing. If Denny's going to get one thing right, it's going to be the visual look of the thing. Like the set does. I mean, the art direction and the design of everything from the clothes to the settings to it'll every little minutia thing. But I'm pumped. There's so many things we haven't seen yet. Like, we got to see the Gom Jabbar and the pain scene. We got to see a sandworm. We got to see some Chris knives. We got to see some Ornithopters. We got to see Arrakis and Caladan, and we got to see all that stuff. There's still stuff we haven't seen that I'm so pumped about. We haven't seen anyone who works for the guild or any guild navigators. So I wonder if we'll get to see a guild navigator. That would be really exciting. I think we saw some guild highliners. I think that's what the big boxy shifts were. That's kind of how they're described in the book. We see Beast Raban for a second. We kind of see Baron Harkonnen, but not really. So there's more there to see. I don't know that we see Peter DeVries. We see We see all like the main people from House Atreides. We see Dr. Yui, we see Duncan, we see Gurney. I don't think that Thufir's in the trailer. I don't remember seeing him. He's in the, I mean, we know who's playing him and there's been set pictures of him. We don't see Thufir Howard. We see Lady Jessica. We see the Reverend Mother. We see obviously Duke Leto and Stilgar and Chani and Dr. Liet, but there's still so many people I want to see that I'm so excited about. Like, who's going to play Shoutout Mapes and who's going to be, I'm curious if Fade's going to, because we haven't heard anything about who's going to play Fade. Fade doesn't really come into the story until the second half of the book, so it's possible we may. I mean, he's in the first like two chapters of the book, but he doesn't really have a role in the book movie, in the book until way later, so I wonder if we'll see him. I don't know. I keep just naming off weird stuff. I'm just excited. I'm real pumped.
It looks so good, and the thing is I think I own it on HD DVD. I need to change it over to the Blu-ray one, but obviously Lynch's Dune is good. It just feels like weak at points. I think you were kind of hinting at it to where it's like, it's not a bad adaptation. It's just, I think certain things were,
well, I mean,
cinema the studio, wasn't ready for it, right?
The studio got involved. Like, there's a reason he took his name off the movie. Like, whether or not his final vision would have been what we wanted, but like, there was a lot of problems with that production, so...
But we talked about it as the trailer drop. Like, in that version, when you watch it now, like the sandworms, they're almost laughable. And then you see it at the end of this trailer, and it's like, that is absolutely like horrifying with the like almost Jurassic Park sound, like everything, whatever it is. It is fantastic looking. It just looks so intense. And I, having seen and appreciated Blade Runner 2049 so much, makes me even more confident in this, because I feel like Blade Runner 2049 was the perfect example to say, here you go. We know this guy can handle Dune, right? Like, it is that tone, that like you mentioned, the art design, the set design, everything about it, it just looks good. Adam, it looks like you have a thing to say on it before I drop the bad news.
Don't drop bad news. This is an only positive moment, Iggy. Don't take away my positive happiness. This is the only thing that's driving me forward right now. No, I'm really, really excited, and I think Lynch's version, definitely hamstrung by the time period when he's making it, right? When did that come out? 84?
Before that.
86, something like that. I mean, it's early 80s. Still, the things he's able to do are pretty freaking fantastic and really, really well done. 84? Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's 84.
Yeah, I mean, taking that in granted, I think he did a fantastic job, but obviously we can do so much more now and so much more easily. Like, you know, even little things like the blue spice eyes, right? Like, you go back and you watch the original and you're like, very blue and very obviously added in. But like,
it's very Tron suity. It's using the same effect they did to do Tron suits. We're just gonna cut them out and put blue lights behind them.
Right. Yeah. And so like, okay, well, that's a bit of a bummer, but that was kind of the best we could do. And you look at it now and they're still very blue and very, you know, and it's unsettling, and it's supposed to be unsettling. They talk about it in the book about how like it's, oh wow. You know, it's so obvious and it's so painfully noticeable, like, but it just felt better. And I think that's a technological thing, right? It looks and feels better even while still being unsettling.
But I think also the cast too, and Tyler, you brought it up, everybody's cast. This cast is incredible. But it's, I feel like it's funny because every person they show, I'm like, oh, I'm a huge fan of this, to the almost where I feel like I say that about everybody, but I don't. But Oscar Isaac, I don't like name something, okay, besides one role in the X-Men franchise, name something where he just wasn't like that great. Or, I mean, Timothée Chalamet has become like one of the best young actors there is. Like, he has blown me away in multiple different roles, and he looks fantastic in this trailer. Zendaya, as in the Spider-Man movies to Greatest Showman, like, has
Euphoria. Euphoria on HBO.
She just won the Emmy for that, right? Like, this cast is like a cast that is just, it's just right. And most of them too, when they name, like, I think back when they were announcing people, before they even named their roles, we were podcasting and saying, oh, this is obviously who's going to play blah, 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 right? This character is playing, because it just makes sense for those people too. Really looking forward to it for sure. So, won't call it bad news yet, Adam, because we don't know yet. However, of all the announcements, we saw all these trailers, the movie delays started again. Warner Brothers was one of the first. They pushed back Wonder Woman to Christmas Day. And as much as Dune is still in that window, we have to be smart and know that not only under a normal year is Warner Brothers not going to release two of their biggest releases of the year in 1 week. Under a year like this, where they couldn't even make you domestic money off a Tenet barely, there's no way Dune stays in that spot. And if we're lucky, it's looking summer 2021 right now. There's a lot of annoyed faces right now.
Shut the fuck up, Iggy.
You think summer?
I mean, that's the rumors that they're going to push, because if especially with delays happening in the winter, there is a lot of belief that Wonder Woman could be pushed again, because with flu season coming, obviously there's a lot of the scientific community is talking about how bad this winter can be with all this. They're talking about the outbreak starting again in Europe. And we were mentioning before we recorded around here with the colleges and stuff. There's a likely that early, you know, January, February, the theater is going to look like it does right now. Like there's no reason to so everything's just getting pushed back. And so the big talk is that a lot of studios are talking right now that it's just summer 2021. Like we keep pushing back a couple months at a time and it's not doing it. Obviously after Wonder Woman Disney pushed back everything. They delayed all of the MCU projects that are happening on the big screen, a number of things. The only things they kept were Pixar, Soul, and Free Guy. And I think those make sense, because Free Guy is one of those ones to where they were probably just, we inherited this from Fox, whatever it makes. And Pixar, Soul, I really see that as becoming the test too, like Milan did for the premium Disney Plus thing. So I see that one as an option around the holiday season to being available for video on demand, is why they haven't delayed that one. But everything else, Disney has pushed back as well. So I'm just being real with myself. I was ready. I was going to finally I'm not ready to go theater for any of this other stuff. I'll go for Dune in December. I was like, I will go catch this coronavirus, but I'm just being realistic with myself, guys. It's probably not happening.
I'd pay $30 to rent Dune and then pay again to see it in the movie theater whenever they decide.
I would pay for the whole theater before I would pay, because I want to see that on the big screen first. The same with Tenet. I'm not renting Tenet at home, even though I've heard bad things about it. It's a Nolan movie. You have to see that in theaters at first, I think. You saw it, so you're saying
bad things about it? Yeah.
Really, the reviews are terrible on it, dude.
Yeah, the general critical consensus is mixed at best.
Well, yeah, and by terrible, enjoyable. I mean expectations for Christopher Nolan, terrible, right? Like, but exactly, you saw it in theater. I'm like, I can't go to the theater right here, around here. We've talked about it on a personal level. I'm high risk. I can't do this stuff. And I can't rent that one. That's one I have to see it. And especially with, we talked about Lynch's Dune being 84. We're all fans of the book, all fans of that one. Obviously, I didn't see that in theaters. Like, I obviously didn't see it I saw it on, actually, I don't think I even ever saw a re-release of it in theaters, to be honest. I think I've only ever seen it on a TV screen.
Did it ever get a big re-release in theaters?
I don't, but I'm thinking like maybe Drafthouse did it or something. I don't know. And maybe Drafthouse will do it ahead of this.
I wish more movies would do that. I last year, or what was it, 2 years ago? How long has it been now? I got a chance to go see the re-release of 2001 A Space Odyssey in theaters. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It was so good. Like, seeing that in a theater makes me because that movie came out 2 years, 1 year, 2 years before the moon landing, 1 year before. Seeing that movie in a theater makes you understand how people can believe that Kubrick faked the moon landing.
Don't say that. Life say that you can understand that or accept it in any way, shape, or form.
Definitely don't say it at an election where people are jumping.
God, it makes me I mean, there's a lot of things that make me angry. People who don't believe we landed on the moon are might be number one or number two on the list.
Wait. Really, what is it competing with before we move on?
Wanting to teach not science in schools to children.
Okay. I've heard you complain about both. I would say those would probably hand. Did you watch that Bill Nye documentary on Netflix?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
but seeing it in a theater, and so many of the effects, like, because they had to be done in such a practical way, like, it's so insane the stuff that Kubrick did in that movie, from the lighting to like making the full set for the running scene to my personal favorite is like the scene at the very beginning where he's riding on the plane, the space plane, and there's that pin floating in air and the stewardess like goes and grabs it and pulls it out. Do you know how they did that effect?
No.
It's all in camera. They glued it to a giant piece of super, super clear, clean glass. like a really big piece of glass. So because the camera has to be able to zoom out and you have to be able to not see it's there. And then she just reaches out and plucks it off the glass. Because every effect had to be done in camera. Even the sequence where he makes like the time warp to like the weird museum thing is done in camera using these cool effects where they cut slits through things and then show color through them. It's all done in camera and it's mind blowing to me. Sorry, I just love that movie so much.
No, it's fantastic.
Seeing it in a theater was really cool.
And it is, like you said, it's beyond ahead of its time too, and it's influenced so much else. But yeah, that's a good point though, especially those older ones. There's so many things I would love to see in theater, and there are a lot of ones that I have. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just banking on, I'm not counting on December. If we get it in December, if I prepare for the worst and we get it in December, then I'm just even extra happy about it, right? Like, it would be awesome if the option, because around here, we can still rent out a whole theater. The problem that allows us, so the Draft House isn't doing new releases with that, or at least wasn't last time I checked.
They're rolling that out nationwide now.
Are that? Yeah, so Cinemark, though, is doing it with new releases. The problem is the Cinemarks that are doing it here are 45-minute drives. I will rent a whole theater and drive 45 minutes to rent out a whole Cinemark for Dune. I'll do that for Dune. So I will drive into Ground Zero Boulder right now because of the university that's made it another outbreak area again and watch that at that theater. But again, I'm thinking summer. But let's talk. We've talked a little bit about news. It's been a while since we got together. So we're all watching The Boys, obviously. You're reading some comics, Adam. Tyler, I have to say it. I like it. I don't love it. I'm trying to. It was a mistake for me to read Lamb and Fool before reading A Dirty Job, because A Dirty Job just is not, it's just okay, not so even close as good.
Here's the thing about Christopher Moore, and I love me some Christopher Moore. Lamb is probably the greatest thing he's ever done. Like, it's his piece of resistance. Fool is really good. Sacre Bleu, I love a lot. Okay, he has a lot of other books that are all kind of, they're fine. Practical Demon Keeping is one of those. A Dirty Job is one of those.
A Dirty Job, the plot and the idea is fantastic. He's a super creative guy. It's the way he writes some of the dialogue, and I'm like, this is, compared to Lamb, it's just not even, like, it's just not there, you know? That's, I think, the problem is some of those scenes.
That's one of the biggest problems with Lamb is typically the gateway for a lot of people to Christopher Moore books. I know that was the first Christopher Moore book I ever read. You have a tendency
I read your Lamb.
Your copy. I've owned five copies of that book, and I don't currently have one in my home, so that tells you a lot about that book. That's one I give out to a lot of people, but I think mine's in Iowa right now. I'm not honestly sure where my most recent copy of the book is. But yeah, it's so good, and I mean, here's the thing. A lot of his other books are pretty good. Yeah. They're just not as good as that. I mean, I would say that Fool's up there on the almost as good. I would also say that Sacre Bleu is up there in the almost as good as Lamb, or if not as good as Lamb, but everything else is, they're still fine. They're still fun.
Fool's super creative. I haven't read Sacre Bleu. I'll have to check it out. Comic wise, and Adam, maybe you check this one out, and the reviews on it said, this is the Birds of Prey. This is a volume that came out, I want to say it was in May or June, was what the movie that came out last winter should have been. And after reading it, I would say so. This is a fantastic adaptation. My daughter wants to read it, but there are some decapitations, quite a few decapitations in this. In fact, is Garth Ennis? No, his name's not on there. Anyway, so that's a good read. Birds of Prey was one that I was checking out. Tyler, this is it. I'm opening up the floor for you to list the books you're reading. Something
see, you want every episode. Here's honestly the problem. I was looking at my list. I have a ton of unread books right now, just a stack of them. But like finding the energy to like decide I'm going to read a book has been real hard. And it's been rough. Like over the last 3 months, I have started and finished exactly 3 books, which is a little bit upsetting because a lot of books have come out that I've wanted to read. So I've read one book from cover to cover in July, one in August, one in September. So I will say that I just finished like 2 nights ago, the most recent of Seanan McGuire's The October Day series. It was a really good book. It was really fun. It was a lot of fun. It's called something with ice and cold, and I don't even remember. Killing Frost. That's it. A Killing Frost. October Day number 14. Last month, I read Harrow the Ninth, which was the sequel to Gideon the Ninth, which was amazing. I loved everything about it. I love the first one. I love the second one. I'm super pumped for the third one. In July, I read Peace Talks, which is Dresden Files number 16. It was awesome to get more Harry Dresden after God knows how many years has it been at this point, Adam, since the last one, since Skin Game came out.
Why?
I mean, it's been
2015, 2016, something like that.
Let's look it up. When did Skin Game come out? Skin Game came out in 2014. So it's been 6 years since the last Harry Dresden book. The good news is we're getting two Harry Dresden books this year. So I get another one later this month. The bad news is when you read Peace Talks, it becomes very clear that is the first half of a story. Like, it finishes
on a
huge cliffhanger that's like, and the plot of it moves, rush. Then you get to the end and it's like, boom. And then get ready for the next book when we're going to resolve all the shit that just happened in this book.
Hurry up and wait, huh?
That's a bummer. So that was a little bit of a letdown. Regardless, I get the next book 2 months later, so I'm not going to fret. Like, it literally comes out, I think, next week, possibly, Tuesday. So I'm not going to stress about it. Otherwise, Anthony Ryan's newest book is out. I have bought it. I have not read it yet. The third book in the Barrow Cormont series just came out. I have some friends who've read it. I'm really excited about that. What else? I don't know. I'm trying to think what else I've done recently.
We'll call it a lot. I think that is a lot.
We play a lot of games.
What are we playing? I see a stack. I see games on your couch back there.
A lot of board games. Like, so some of my friends who have also been isolated and working from home have finally cracked, and like about once a week we get together and play board games. So behind me, you can see...
Oh, when you move the chair, you got tons of games behind you.
Hey, I mean, that's
like tripled the number.
There's way more board games back over there too. Pipeline, which I still haven't played yet. Wingspan, which we play a lot. It's been out for a couple of years. Azul, the third Azul. Troyes, which is from the makers of Black Angel, which is a game I really like. Dune, the board game.
One of them is Dune. Yeah, it's just okay. What I saw.
Dune is as a board game has a really interesting history. It's kind of a legend around board game players because the original Dune came out in the 60s, the board game, and it was a really, really big game. And then it's been in licensing hell for the last like 40 years. And last year it got finally the licensing got cleared up and Gale Force 9 like kind of tweaked some of the rules to modernize them and re-release the game. The thing is it's still a very much a 40-year-old board game. So not in a bad way, but in a like unforgiving, totally broken mechanically wise. So like the base game of it has six factions and every faction has their own special like game breaking ability that's super true to the books and the themes of the books. And to the point where like in the rule book, there's an FAQ where it's like, hey, this rule reads this way. Why would we do it this way? The book rules will like straight quote passages from the book to be like, well, in the books it works this way, so this is the way it should work in the game. It makes for an amazing game. It makes for a super complex game. But so like, for instance, there's every round of the game, there's an auction where the blind cards can be bought. You bid on cards to buy them, and each card has an ability or a power that you could use against the other factions. If a character's playing the Emperor's faction, you pay them instead of the bank every time you buy a card. So that's how they make money. Anytime you need to move troops to the planet, which you have to do all the time to fight, you don't pay money to the bank, you pay it to the Spacing Guild. Every time, everyone in the game gets one trader card, where so there's every faction has like five generals that they can use in battle, and everyone has one trader card, so there's one general in the game somewhere that if they fight against you, you instantly win because you've paid them off as a trader. If you play as the Harkonnen faction, you get four of those cards instead of one. Also, anytime you buy like a treachery card, which are those cards you bid on, if you're everyone can hold up to four of them in their hand, the Harkonnens can hold eight of them in their hand, and every time they buy one, they just get an extra one for free. The Atreides get to look at the cards and write down what's on them so they can like predict the future. And then there's this big storm that goes around the board. The Atreides are spice blows. There's spice blows that happen all over the map so that you have to go and gather the spice because that's the currency in the game. The Atreides get to look at those cards ahead of time so they know where it's going to happen at before it happens. So every faction has abilities like that to like break the game. The Fremen obviously don't have to ship anyone to the planet, so they're for free. They can survive the sandstorms, and if a worm pops up in their location, rather than kill everyone in that location, they just jump on its back and can instantly warp to anywhere else on the planet by riding the worm. That said, all of those things make the game kind of broken, but in a really, really beautiful way. So we play it a lot. We've kind of burned ourselves off on it because we've played it so much. So it's a really fun board game, but an expansion came out recently that adds the Tulaxus and the Ixians, which are almost entirely game-breaking because now you have to pay the Tilaxu to resurrect your troops, and they have face dancers, which are like traitors, but only more powerful, and it's a whole thing. But I love the game. I've bought like high-end better pieces to like third-party pieces to replace the board and replace the tokens and things like that. The one thing I will say about it is because of the factions having such game-breaking abilities, when you play it, we've had games that went like four rounds and lasted like 45 minutes, and the last time we played it, it went 10 rounds and lasted like 4 hours. And it was just like a slog. And at the end, the faction that won only won because no one else won.
Surveillance.
So, right. You can also play as the Bene Gesserit, and you have a bunch of cool abilities, including like the ability to force people to answer questions that you ask them truthfully in battle. But your main ability is at the very beginning of the game, you can make a prediction of which faction will win and which turn they'll win on. And if that faction wins on that turn, you win instead.
So games, books.
A lot of board games.
What are we watching?
Next weekend, board game weekend. So
what's better yet, instead of what are we watching? Well, I've watched a few. I think I messaged the group last night. Was watched the 2005 producers again, which is always great. What new have we caught, I guess? I know, Adam, you did say you were able to catch Tenet in theaters out there. There's been some interesting things that have dropped. I've got one for sure, but what have you guys been catching?
We've been watching, actually, like a month or 2 months ago, somewhere in the summer, my cable contract like came up and I had to renew. And I was like, you just give me the internet. I don't need the cable or the home phone that they gave me as part of my package. To keep my internet where it was would have been £50. When they add in the cable that I don't watch and the home phone, which I don't have, it goes down to £34. So like, okay, sure, no problem. And that being said, then I got cable again, so I hooked my box back up. So I was like, all right, we'll see what we can actually find on this thing. Watching British TV, sure, why not? Let's give it a try. And so I've been watching British TV recently, which is no help for a lot of our listeners. Probably some people who live in England. Been watching the new season of Great British Bake Off started, so I get that. Fantastic.
No tent now, right?
No, they have a tent, but they do a bubble. So they're bubbled. So the people in the, who like, you know, they're usually there on the weekend and they go home and they practice.
They come back. They have to live there.
They stay there. They all live there together, which makes it even worse when they have to like, at the end of every episode, when somebody leaves, like, it's like usually weepy, but now it's like, very weepy. That's great. We also started watching this show called Gogglebox.
Gogglebox is amazing.
It is absolutely amazing, and it is the weirdest concept for a show ever, because you are watching people watch TV, which sounds ridiculous and is ridiculous, but is genuinely, we can't stop. We don't.
It's engrossing.
It really, really is, and you get to know these people, because it's the same people for like years and years and years, and so like, it tells you what they're watching. Oh, they're watching Broadchurch, and you watch them watch Broadchurch for like 5 minutes, and they make these ridiculous reactions, and it's crazy. But British TV, they have all of these absolutely wild.
It's all about panel shows, baby.
Yeah,
you got to watch all the panel shows are my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, we've already done QI and
8 out of 10 Countdown.
And we haven't done Countdown yet. No,
not original Countdown. 8 out of 10 Cats does Countdown.
Oh, we haven't done that either, no.
So there's Countdown, which is like for old people, and like, let's do the math, let's do the numbers, and it's got an old host, and it's really good. It's if you like anagrams and mathematics, it's fun. They do right. 8 out of 10 Cats do Countdown, which is a combination of 8 out of 10 Cats and Countdown, and it's hosted by Jimmy Carr.
The Jimmy Carr one, yeah.
And has Sean Locke and John Richardson as the team captains.
Yeah.
And it's just comedians doing it Countdown, and it's brilliant.
I've sat down and watched it, but it pops up all the time, like, oh, you should watch this because, you know, I'm watching stuff on my cable box now and it tells me other shows to watch. You can hit like all of the remotes over here have colored buttons and it says hit the green button now to watch whatever. And it gives you this little blurb and you're like, why do you do this to me, cable box?
How about Would You Lie to Me? Or Would I Lie to You?
I haven't watched that one. So one that we got into, they also do a ridiculous number of all the panel shows, but they also do a ridiculous number of reality TV shows. They've got one that my wife loves and I find just is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Another weirdest thing I've ever seen on TV. It's called Five Guys a Week. And it's a woman. And she invites, through an app that the producers put out, I guess, she picks five guys that she likes. And they all come in. They legitimately move into her home for a week. And like each day she's sending somebody home. And it's so weird, you know, because British homes aren't large. And so like sometimes the girls have to go back to their parents' house. And like their family home and invite all these guys over. And so like there's the, you know, their parents and 5 27-year-old men just hanging out in this house like together. And it's so weird. It's wild. Just the amount of reality TV here or live TV, like panel shows that, you know, things that are recorded live that aren't scripted. It's absolutely insane.
Have you seen Naked Attraction yet? Because I feel like knowing your wife, she would love that show. Are you familiar with Naked Attraction?
Which one? No, we haven't done Naked Attraction now.
Do you know what it's about?
Mm-mm.
So it's a dating show.
I can guess.
It's a dating show, basically. And it starts with one person who's like the contestant and then six people up on stage. And those six people are completely naked and hidden in booths. And then throughout, throughout like successive rounds, more and more of their body gets revealed. And then each round they eliminate a person. And then when it's at the end, there's only two naked people left who've been mostly completely revealed. And then the contestant has to take all of their clothes off on stage. And eventually it's down to two people who then like go on a date.
Yeah.
It sounds so ridiculous, but it is hilarious and beautiful.
Yeah. All these shows are crazy. There's another one called First Dates where like they film people's first dates. And then afterwards they're like, so what do you think? Do you want to go out on another date? And they'll talk to them individually. Like, oh, it was really nice. I really enjoyed it. And then they put them together. And like, so you guys going out on a second date? And like half the time the guy's like, yeah, no, that'd be great. And the girl's like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Like 2 seconds earlier, she was saying really nice things about how much fun she had on the date. Then all of a sudden, she's like, yeah, no, it's not. I'm not doing that. And they're just sitting there like awkwardly next to each other. You're like, okay, good stuff, guys. Thanks.
So I know Netflix has dropped a number of things too. They just dropped, the new Holmes show with Millie
Noah Bobby. Holmes.
I watched about half of it. It's pretty fun so far.
It's gotten really good reviews. So that's a new one. I think
it's definitely like young adulty, but I've enjoyed it.
We're a week or two away from the trial of Chicago 7, which that trailer dropped and looks really good. But we do have, what's the Tom Holland one? Is it The Devil?
Did you guys watch The Devil All the Time?
I haven't watched it yet, but I have it on my list.
I've been watching Utopia on Amazon Prime.
Ooh, on Amazon,
it's,
yeah.
It's pretty good so far.
So yeah. I did watch Kaufman's Thinking of Ending Things. Ugh. Okay, so first of all.
Oh my gosh. No, that was a thing.
99% of it is fantastic. And then you get towards the end and I'm like, if this goes where I think it's going, which honestly is nowhere, I'm just going to be honest about it. I'm going to be pissed. And well, let's just say I wasn't pleased at the end.
Have you seen Charlie Kaufman's story?
I thought it was genius. Like I get where you can be upset with it. It's still so good.
So first of all, the directing is phenomenal to the 4:3 aspect ratio to kind of give it that old timey feel to just the amount. And then the acting, there are so many points in that movie to where I was just so uncomfortable right there with your main characters. Like you are just made to feel so uncomfortable. The dialogue is unbelievable. It is fantastic. What's her name? That actress, let me see. It's Jessie Buckley. Mind blowing. Fantastic. Everything about it. But it just
Jessie's the boyfriend.
No, her name's
Jessie Buckley's. No, her name is she's from
Jess Plemons is the I've got it pulled up on IMDb right now. Jess Plemons is the boyfriend. Jessie Buckley.
Oh, okay.
Jess and Jessie.
They're both Jess. I was gonna say, I feel like Jessie Buckley's Plemons
because Jess Plemons is from I think most people would probably recognize him from the big season of Dark Mirror or whatever.
Black Mirror.
Thank you. The space show, the one that was really the space episode that was pretty popular.
And Friday Night Lights. That was a pretty big TV show.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't watched the show.
And he was in Breaking Bad.
And I didn't like that show that much.
And then anyway. second season of Fargo, one of the seasons of Fargo, he's like the main character.
The movie, everything.
Damn it, Iggy.
It is so incredible. And you are, the thing is, and I get it too, Kaufman movies, especially when you look at Eternal Sunshine and Being John Malkovich. Adaptation film. There are movies that
I love Adaptation.
I do too, but there's certain movies of his that just leave it kind of, there are things that happen to where you have to guess or interpret, right? And that's where it really sets it up, but it leaves it to where I really wanted some payoff. I really wanted some clarity on some things and you get none of it at the end. Like you get none of it. I really want to check out, it's based off a book. I want to check out the book to see if the book has more clarity, maybe in the descriptions of things that happen in the scenes and stuff or what. Again, I think Kaufman does a phenomenal, it is very Kaufman. Like he does a phenomenal job with his parts. It just felt like, I think when we ended it, I think the best example was to say it. And it's, you feel like you're getting jerked off for 2 hours and then you just don't get to finish. Like you just don't, like that's how it felt. Like,
I mean, that's kind of his thing though.
Feeling good for 2 hours. It's given me, and then nope, that's it. Nothing. So that's kind of where I felt with the movie. It's hard with the way the world is right now to get that mindset. There's certain movies that I think I can appreciate at different times. Like right now, I'm not about to put on an Aronofsky film and they're releasing a director's cut of Requiem for a Dream. Like, no, I'm not about to put that in my life in 2020.
Fuck right off.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, go ahead, Tyler.
Speaking of Fargo, though, the new season of Fargo starts tonight and it takes place in 1950s Kansas City, starring Jason Schwartzman and Chris Rock, and it looks
I saw it, so it looks pretty
good. It looks so good.
Catch up on it, but
Fargo's such a good show.
We are out of time, like we've done in the past, because there are some big things going on. I know we've been pretty lighthearted. We've been enjoying the entertainment part. That's what the Nerdcast is here. We obviously are very aware of what's going on in society today, and there are some big things happening this fall and big things leading into this election. If you want to hear more of how we feel about that, obviously we have some scripts written for Diving Deep, which will be coming out right here on this podcast feed. We'll talk a little bit about the Supreme Court, the election, and of course conspiracy theories are some of the Diving Deep episodes you'll see here soon. Biggest thing I want to say is that we did drop the on last week was obviously voter registration day for 2020. We got links, we got FAQs, we've got a list of facts with links to places about why mail-in voting is a good thing and something you should be okay with. And we have a number of the president who tells you mail-in voting's bad. It's the exact same thing as an absentee vote, and that's exactly how he votes in Florida. So if it's good enough for the president, Donald Trump, it's good enough for the rest of us. Anyways, before I get too angry on that stuff, is obviously a lot going on. Check those out if you want to do that. Please register to vote. The problem is, as we sit here again, is we have so many vocal young people right now standing up against what is wrong, and we have to take that voice to the polls and vote. The only way we get out of this, I know Biden is not our best answer, but I can tell you what, I don't know if four more years of the current answer is any answer that we survive. So go vote, make sure you're registered, check it out. We've got all the links on our site and everything. We've got a banner right at the top of the site that takes you over to a voter registration, obviously project-nerd.com, or you can go vote.gov, just straight there to take care of it. Obviously I have some big opinions on what happened this past week. I was, I think without going too deep into it, I was distraught Wednesday. I cried a little bit. I won't be afraid to admit it. I go to therapy about every 6 weeks, and coincidentally it was Wednesday this past week, and I got there and spent the first half of my session talking about what's happening in this world and where it's putting me and where it's making me feel and where I feel like I'm letting my kids down, or that we as a whole are. And just a lot to be said. And I think it's just, there are a lot of voices that need to be heard. And I know there's always the argument of, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, violence shouldn't bring violence, all this stuff like this, but nothing seems to be getting these voices heard. Nothing seems to be changing. And I just don't know what to do or say anymore. And I am a person that's speaking from a place of privilege. So I can't imagine where those people that aren't from this place of privilege are feeling and saying. I don't know, guys, if you have anything you want to add there on this stuff in the last few seconds we have here as we wind out this episode of the Nerdcast.
Nah, I think that pretty well covers it, man. I mean, register, yeah. Vote.
Please vote.
Participate, activate, find a friend, digitally hug them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take care of each other.
People.
Yeah.
Be, what's it? You know, just be kind.
Yeah, be excellent to
each other. There you go. Yeah. On the mask there. Awesome. Well, that's it for the Nerdcast 233. I had it at the beginning.
Well, come on, man.
We just touched on a serious topic and I'm kind of anxiety going now, obviously. So check it out. This will be airing this week. We have a Diving Deep this week. Be on the lookout. I know we've been light the past couple months, but check out all our podcast feeds, or just head on over to projectnerd.com/podcast. That's project-nerd.com/podcast. And you can see all the many podcasts we have across various feeds, as we have a number of them still going and a number of them cranking back up. But we appreciate you visiting us. We appreciate you sticking with us in our feed, even in these slower times. We know you all have been out there and picking up episodes every time they drop. We love hearing from you too. So if you find any, if you listen to us anywhere, you can leave comments, please do so. We'll definitely be in touch or bring it up and, you know, ask us a question. Give us a topic to argue on. We like to argue for sure. So, all right, gentlemen, that's it for this episode of the Nerdcast. Until next time.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.